My main research interest is about the actually regularity problem of the Stokes system and Navier-Stokes equation, in particular near boundary. So the title is the on regularity to Stokes system and Navier-Stokes near boundary. Let me first consider the Stokes system, which is nothing but linearized Navier-Stokes equation. So we don't have a nonlinear term in this case. Just for convenience of the notational matter, let me introduce B plus R is usual ball, but which is located above hyperplane. So xn is bigger than 0. And Q plus R is the usual cylinder. And gamma is the actually part of boundary of B plus R, but it's not all of boundary. It's a part of the boundary, actually flat part of the boundary. Because I'm considering the local problem of the Stokes system. So the problem I consider here is the Stokes system, as I said before. U indicate velocity vector field, and pressure is the, P is the pressure. Of course, both of them are unknowns. And this is incompressible case. In other words, divergence precondition we have. And then homogeneous boundary condition is assigned on gamma. Here I emphasize that zero boundary conditions only assigned on gamma. Actually, we have another part of the boundary, which is around the region in P plus R, but we don't have any information on that part of the boundary. Okay. Basically, I'm interested in this kind of a priori estimate. X and Y, Z are function space, which will be determined, specified later. And C1 and C2 are constant. So let me consider the steady state case, which means basically solution is time independent. So UT is 0. In such case, we can have actually, we easily see that X is usual Sobolev space, and Y is L2, and C2 is 0. In other words, we can have this type of estimate. The meaning is basically we can control every higher derivative in terms of L2 norm of U. The main point is the pressure doesn't appear in the right-hand side. You see, if you're looking at the original system, then okay, this is the case time independent, so we don't have UT, but Laplace U equal to, the plus gradient P is equal to 0. So if you consider, if you just simply testing some U times cutoff function, then immediately you have the gradient term, but on the right-hand side, you have a multiplication of pressure and then U. Somehow we have to control pressure. It's not, I would say it's not easy problem anyhow, but we have to prove this estimate without pressure. Also, you can add the external force in the system, then in general, we have this type of estimation. U is, again, estimated by L2 norm of U and external force. Yeah, as I said before, the main thing is pressure does not appear in the right-hand side. Also, once you have this estimate, then we can also control the pressure too, in terms of U and external force. Okay. We can do the same as you can get the same estimate in a more general situation. For instance, for simplest, I just consider the simple domain, which is half a ball above the hyperplane. But if the domain is sufficiently smooth, like this, and then under the reasonable assumption of external force, then if you're looking at the local regions, then it's a basic local problem. Then we can control every higher derivative of U and pressure in terms of external force, and I would say L2 is okay, but the best result, I think, L1, norm of U. Of course, the coefficient depending on dimensions and then radius OR and I0, I think. Of course, X, yeah, K is the number of derivatives, something like this. The easy application of this estimate is follows, I mean, the Rubel type problems. So the question is, we consider the steady-state Stokes system, which is above the hyperplane, and then zero boundary conditions is assigned on the xn equal to zero. Then the question is, for simplicity, if you assume that u is just bounded, then the question is whether the solution is zero or not. But actually, it turns out it's true because more general statement, if you allow the reasonable growth condition at infinity, then immediately we have the uniqueness. Actually, because of the boundary condition, it should be zero. Why is that? The estimate I present before is gives the very simple proof, because we know that according to the previous estimate, we can have by embedding, for instance, say b plus 1 of the gradient, b plus 1 can be estimated by constant c times sub, if you want, then u at infinity, yeah, in the bigger region, right? When you scale it, then we have factors, and then if you divide by this, then this goes to zero because u is bounded. So it gives a very simple proof, I think. But this result is not already proved by Fawig, but method is different. My estimate is basically gives the simple proof for this statement. Anyway, another application, the estimate for the Stokes system is the partial regularity for the 5D Navier-Stokes equation for the steady-state case. Five dimension is actually the first dimension when the steady-state Navier-Stokes equation is supercritical. In other words, supercritical means usual embedding or bootstrapping argument doesn't give any regularity to the Navier-Stokes equation. But if you consider the nonlinear term as forcing term, then we can use the such kind of estimate by perturbation method. So the main result in this case, under the reasonable conditions on solution with solutions, we can conclude u is actually regular everywhere except for some possible singular set S, where of course S is closed. Moreover, the dimension of the possible singularities of one dimensional house of measure zero. When it comes to the five dimensional steady state case and the three dimensional time dependent case, there are some similarities. For instance, scaling matter or embedding matters. That's why we have the
total measure of balls to five.
Five. Yeah. So. I'm sorry? In three-dimensional steady state is also, it's already solved. The solution is regular in the steady state case for the Navier-Stokes. Four-dimension is a critical case, but also the answer is positive. Solution is regular. For five-dimension, nobody knows, still open problem for the Navier-Stokes equation. And I would say, there are similarities, as I said, both in time-dependent case, 5D case. Of course, totally different problem, but if you just compare the embeddings or scaling matters, then exactly same for the time three-dimensional time-dependent case. So as far as I know, the best result for the time-dependent case is just like this. Actually, suitable weak solution is regular except for a possible singular set whose one-dimensional Hausdorff measure is zero. So, at this moment, it's best I can do, I think. But nobody knows, I mean, actually the solution is regular or not. For the part. I mean, any dimension. For the Stokes system, the estimate for the Stokes system is available for any dimension. But in particular, in 5D actually works. I mean, in higher dimensions, I don't think so. Because different house dimension, But an interesting case, five-dimensional case, of course, is a little bit away from the original question, but because there are some similarities, that's why people usually study 5D steady-state Stokes equation. We can do the, you know, more general dimension, but, yeah. Okay, by the way, let me remark here. Actually, in five-dimensional steady-state case, Frese and Ruzicka actually constructed a regular solution in the interior. But actually, it was not proved up to the boundary. It's a still open problem, whether we can construct a regular solution up to boundary for the 5D steady-state case. But if I combine these results and their results, then we conclude that for such solutions, possible singularity only occurs at the boundary, and then the size of the possible singular set is of one dimensional half of magnitude. Okay, now we consider time dependent case. So now ut is non zero, then we have these situations, still Stokes system, and homogeneous boundary conditions are assigned again on the flat boundary at each time slice. Okay. If you compare the similar situation to the heat equation, then immediately we can have these types of estimate, which means basically we can control every temporal derivative or spatial derivative in a smaller region can be controlled in terms of, say, L2 norm of U. In a bigger reason. I think there are many ways to look at this estimate, but the simplest proof, I think, you can reflect basically in the heat equation case, for the heat equation. Or you can think of, I mean, if you consider the heat kernels, then somehow we have a smoothing effect, right? So, but it's a well-known classical result. But unfortunately, we cannot. For the Stokes system, in general, we cannot expect such phenomenon, such an estimate, because of the presence of the pressure, which is non-local effect, actually. Nevertheless, Russian mathematician Seregin proved that in three-dimensional case, actually he gets some hard estimate. So. In this case, X is a C alpha, Hilbert space, and the Y is L3 space, Z is L3 over 2. Let me write the estimate here. So, in this situation, U, C alpha in time and space, so X in alpha over 2 in time, in a smaller region, say R over 2, can be this guy estimated by combinations of U and pressure. C times, one is the L3 Q plus R plus the other guy is the pressure term. Pressure L3 over 2 in a bigger region. I don't think so. Actually, that's the big difference between the time-dependent case and steady-state case. Steady-state case, actually, we can control pressure in terms of U, but the time-dependent case, somehow, I mean, at this moment, I don't know, but I'm very suspicious if you get this kind of estimate without pressure on the right-hand side. Probably we needed this pressure on the right-hand side. Maybe you wonder about the, why is, we have this special number. Actually, we can do the more general powers, but this number somehow relates to the Navier-Stokes equation. Because, I mean, you'll see later. Anyway, we have a Held estimate. So the natural question is whether we get some estimate for higher derivative, for instance, right? I mean, normal derivative, something like this. But the answer is a little bit negative. Actually, we construct the solution, which is, I mean, the actually energy of the solution is finite, and then U is also bounded, you know, the original also pressure is in some region of a Lubac space, but normal derivative actually is unbounded. In other words, we cannot control an infinite of the derivative in terms of reasonable quantity. In general, it may be not true. Also, we realized that actually the integrability of the pressure is very important in the estimate. So if you have any information about pressure, for instance, if you lose some integrability of the pressure or something like that, then, I mean, even Held estimate is not true, may not be true in general. So somehow the information on the pressure is very important when it comes to local problems. But but if you consider the same situation in the local neighborhood, I mean the interior case, then we easily see that the actually solution of the Stokes system is regular in the spatial variable. The idea is basically, if you're looking at, I think you already know this stuff, but just in case, yeah. And the divergence equal to zero, and the domain here is just BR, something like Q, I think. QR is a usual parabolic cylinder. This is the case of interior. Then you easily see that U actually regular in spatial variables, even if you don't have any information in time derivative. Why is that? Because usually people do is to take the curl operator. Then the pressure drops out, right? Everything is smooth, then it's like just heat equations, right? So spatial variables is okay in the interior, but one difficulty when it comes to boundary case, we have zero boundary condition. But if you take the curl here, then immediately we lose the boundary data. I mean, what's the boundary conditions on the curl? If you take this guy. So we do not know. I mean, we cannot control it. Up to boundary, right? In theory, it's okay, but up to boundary, we have a problem. Actually, there is big differences. Anyway, the pressure is actually plays an important role, I think. And so you can compare the constructed solution is actually doesn't have an explicit form. It's quite difficult. But the simplest example in the interior case is like U is just potential. Then where, I mean, H is harmonic function. So basically, the solution is smooth in spatial variables, but we do not know how the behavior of the solution in time direction. I mean, all I know is that just it's smooth in spatial variables. So basically, for the Stokes system, we can say that the Weyl's lemma is not true for the interior or boundary case too, which means if you have L2 norm of is finite, then in general, Weyl's lemma, for instance, if you look at the harmonic functions, then higher derivatives is controlled in terms of L2. But for the Stokes system, it's not true in the both cases of the interior and the boundary case. By the way, also we can try to find these types of solution near the boundary, but according to the boundary, zero homogeneous boundary conditions, non-trivial solution of this type is not available at the boundary. Simply, you have a boundary condition at near. Also, divergence precondition gives the Second derivative or h at the bound is again zero. That means by reflection principle, h should be constant. In other words, trivial solution we have. So that's why the construction is much more difficult, much more difficult compared to the case. And I just have 5 minutes. Is that right? How much time do I have? Oh, okay. Okay, the next topic is Navier-Stokes equation. The equations I'm considering is the, basically we have a now nonlinear term here, right? So it's a Navier-Stokes equation and divergence free, and then we have a homogeneous boundary condition on the half plane and initial data and external force. But for the simplicity, I assume initial data and the boundary, I mean the external force is sufficiently smooth. For instance, compactly supported, infinitely smooth. Let me remind you well-known result, which is done by James in early 60s. It's a kind of, there are two versions, global, there is one global version and local version, but I just mentioned the local version. So if you have some more information, it's actually, we cannot derive this kind of assumption from the weak formulation, but if you assume U is in this Lebesgue space, in the local neighborhood, in the interior point, then actually U is regular in the neighborhood, small neighborhood. That's the result done by Serin's early 60s. N is dimension, I mean, if you just consider only three-dimensional case, then it's three. Okay, so the, we can also extend this result up to the boundary. I mean, you may expect that it's more or less same, but the, as I said, what the difficulty is we have to anyway control the pressure up to boundary. But when it comes to the mathematical point of view, it's a totally difficult question because we don't have any boundary data on pressure. I mean, we have a good boundary conditions of U, velocity vector field, actually zero boundary condition. Near boundary, but we don't have any boundary conditions on pressure. If you take the curl operator, then immediately we lose the boundary condition. So usually people in the interior case, people take the curl operator and then analyze the vorticity equations. But oh, sure, yeah, I mean. Yeah, of course, if you take the divergence, then somehow you have this kind of relations, Uj. Somehow the piece looks like a quadratic of U, so, but still we don't have any information, the time, the derivative also. So, yeah. So that's the main difficulty, I think. So main... I'm sorry? Oh, so basically I extended the Serin's result up to boundary. I mean, let me show the clear statement. Okay. U is the weak solution of the Navier-Stokes equation in the half space, if you want. And then Z0 is just a boundary point at a specific time. And then now we assume U is in the same Lebesgue space. That's the assumption. Okay. Now, and the exponent satisfies these conditions. Then U is regular in a smaller region up to boundary. Here regular means held continuous. Of course, in the interior case, regular means actually it is smooth in spatial variables, but as I said, even for the Stokes system, the best regularity is the held continuous, you know. That's why a little bit different definition. I mean, the regular means actually up to boundary means it's the held continuous. So conjecture this is just my guess. I mean, but we do not know how to prove it. So the same phenomena maybe occurs even for the Navier-Stokes equation as the Stokes system. In other words, actually the solution is regular, we held continuous, but normal derivative may not be bounded. Well, again, maybe you are confused, but the solution to construct is a little bit away from the original question. Actually, the original question is, I mean, $1 million problem is as follows. If you have a good initial data, sufficiently smooth, and then good boundary data like this, then The main question is whether this solution develops singularity in finite time or not. That's the main question. But this question may be confused a little bit, but it's a little bit different situation because I'm just looking at the local regions, right? And then, I mean, if you're interested in the way to construct the counter example, then I have a paper, so you can look up to that later. Anyway, the main tool is somehow I got the point-wise estimate for the Green tensor for the Stokes system in the half space. Basically, Green tensor means it's like a fundamental solution for the heat Stokes system. This point-wise estimate is not surprising to an expert, but I couldn't find any this type of estimate in the literature. So, but more or less, it's like a little bit different compared to the whole space. But when it comes to the our purpose, actually, it's appropriate computation. So anyway, so this is one part. And you can also consider the axially symmetric flow in the half space. The mathematical definitions of axially symmetric is a little bit complicated, but axially symmetric means it's a symmetry with respect to with respect to 1/6 axis. Also, if I say the axially symmetric with no swirl, then means it's somehow actually angular component is zero of the axially symmetric flow. Then basically we have two components, z component and radial component, and then we don't have any angular component. Then we say the flow is axially symmetric with no swirl. In this case, we can say something more. Actually, the suitable solution, which is actually symmetric with no swirl, then the solution is regular in the half space, everywhere, every time, except for the origin. Actually, origin is a special point because it is it's a boundary point. Again, it is located on the axis of symmetry. So, I don't know. I mean, I have no idea how to prove. We do not know. I mean, it's an open question, I think. But away from the zero, and then maybe, I mean, singularity may occur only in the axis of symmetry because the one-dimensional half-Stokes measure zero means it should be on the axis symmetry. But in the interior, if it is interior point, then actually it's regular in this case. But if you just consider the only actually symmetric, then this is, again, open question, I think. In three-dimensional case. Okay. So the last topic I wish to mention is the recent work with the Gustafson and Chai. And okay, let me explain the main result here. So Z is again boundary point, you know, local neighborhood, and then we are considering this quantity, which is looks a little bit weird, but the thing is, this guy is a scaling invariant, and the exponent is satisfy this relation. For instance, if P and Q are the same, then we have 5 over 2. Okay? So our main result is it's epsilon regularity. Then, I mean, more precisely speaking, if U is a suitable solution of the Navier-Stokes, and then G is a boundary point, then there is, I'm sorry about this typo. Okay. There is an absolute constant epsilon such that limbs of this guy is sufficient, I mean less than epsilon, then Z is a regular point. In other words, Navier-Stokes solution of Navier-Stokes equation is held continuous around in the neighborhood of Z. Let me briefly show how the proof goes. Actually, let me briefly remind you what the suitable solution is. I mean, the notions of this suitable solution first originally done by Gaffarelli, Cohn, and Nirenberg in early 80s, and later many people, there are some modifications, more or less the same. I mean, these definitions, I follow the definitions done by Seregin, but more or less originally, it's the same as the Gaffarelli, Cohn, and Nirenberg construct. So, basically, solution is in the weak space. For instance, energy is finite, and then something like that. Pressure is in some Lübeck spaces. The second derivative again in some Lebesgue spaces, but I mean this kind of assumption is reasonable, I think, because already the Lebesgue-Stokes equations, like the second derivative pressure gradient in some Lebesgue spaces like this. So the main point is the when it comes to the suitable weak solution is this solution satisfies the local energy inequality. I mean, simply you can get this estimate by testing U times Cotter functions, but unfortunately the main question is this kind of thing should whether this kind of thing is actually test functions or not. We do not know because we somehow the thing is okay. We have a nonlinear guy, so Laplace U plus U times rad U plus P equal to 0. So you can just simply multiply U times Cotter function, right? But the thing is, because of nonlinearity, it cannot be true. Maybe not be test functions, right? Because U is just some Lebesgue spaces. That's why we do not know that actually Rayleigh-Hobick solution satisfies the local energy inequality or not. But anyway, the Gaffarelli, Cohn, and Nirenberg construct the suitable weak solution among the weak solutions. So anyway, I would say this is assumption. Sorry? Yeah, sure. I mean, the test function is positive, strictly positive, non-negative. So, yeah, this is a test function, I think, and then non-negative. Yeah. But it's a test technical method. So, let me just introduce some useful functionals. The first one is just L2 number of U at each time slices, and then L3 and energies, and then pressure, and then gradient pressure. But it's a little bit complicated, but thing is, everything is scaling invariant. So the idea of the proof is followed. First of all, first step is to show the sum of this guy is sufficiently small, actually. Epsilon is the absolute constant. If this guy is less than epsilon, then the conclusion is this regular point. That's the first step. So basically, I mean, we need a bunch of calculation, but thing is, we basically, oh yeah, sure. C is the L3 norm of U, and D is D tilde, actually, the pressure gradient. If you control this guy, actually sufficiently small, then you can say this regular point. So basic idea is the globe argument by scaling. Okay. And then next step is again difficult part, but it's originally done by Sorokin recently, and then we somehow modify the argument a little bit, but basically we have pressure estimate. The pressure is estimated in terms of E, A, and E. E is the energy. Let me show you. Okay. E is the energy of the velocity, and A is the, this is again energy at this time slices. So if you combine these two, this estimate combining with the energy inequality, then somehow we can have C and D in terms of phi. Phi is G. G is actually, at the beginning, I assume this is pretty small, less than epsilon. Then we can iterate. So in the end, we have this estimate. Mm-hmm. So, but this is, again, pretty small because the phi is the combination of G, as I said before. Actually, phi is sum of these guys. But for appropriate choice of R, it can be small because I assume the lim inf is small, right? Sufficiently small. Then this guy at small radius is less than epsilon. Then by the step one, you know that this regular point. That's the idea. Yeah? So the consequence of the of this argument is about the partial regularity. For instance, if you assume, you can do these things in more general situation, but U is in M space, M is bigger than 4, less than 5, then U is held continuous, except for a possible singular set and the dimension, the size of singular set is 5 minus m Hausdorff measure 0. Okay, let me start here. 34 over 3.